Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning for this Tuesday, the 18th of April. Very nice to have you with us on this Tuesday. And let me introduce our panel to you. They are here. They are raring to go. We have a lot to talk about. There is a lot happening in the news, even since the stories I sent out as possible suggestions last night. Well, those have all gone. Many have gone by the wayside, and we have more to talk about. So we'll get to that in just a moment. A reminder, you can email us your thoughts, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We do ask two things. Keep your letters short and to the point. And also, don't include links. We can't open them on the air, and it's just annoying. So, if you can keep those things in mind, panel@wamc.org. WAMC's Alan Chartok, good morning. How are you, sir?
I'm all right. I love the idea that you say it's annoying, because there are two things that will happen. Most of our wonderful listeners won't send them because they know it's annoying. But then there are a few who will send it because they know it's annoying. Get it?
We get it, and we know who you mean.
You know, I know, because some of us, if you're going through the mail later on, it's nice just to see a letter and click on an article. But if you're going through them very quickly, as we do in the morning, then we don't have time to do that, and it just gets in the way. And yes, so thank you very much for complying with that. Rosemary Armeo is here. She is the director of the journalism program at the University at Albany. And Rosemary, it is always a delight to have you here.
Good morning.
Good morning. And Mike Spain joins us. He does so each and every Tuesday and whenever we ask him to. And today is a Tuesday, so today was actually scheduled. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Very nice to have you with us. All right. Let's begin with the news that broke just a few hours ago. A stunner, really. The Prime Minister of the UK has called for an early vote in search of stronger mandate in the Brexit talks. Surprising just about everybody, Theresa May has gotten up and announced and said, you know what? I'm going to call for an election. I want the mandate to be stronger. I feel that we can be stronger, so we're going to go for a vote. What does this mean for Brexit? What does this mean for the rest of the world? And as she said, this is the only path to stability. Is that stability possible? I ask all of those questions. Rosemary, do you want to start off?
I wish John Cozy, the intern, were here. He's a Brit and can explain this. To me, elections in Britain are like Andy Rooney. Oh, let's have a show. Let's have an election. She just gets this into her head.
You mean Mickey Rooney? Not Andy Rooney.
Mickey Rooney, right. Thank you.
Andy Rooney is far grumpier.
I hate elections.
Don't you hate when you have a prime minister? Okay, go ahead.
But, she was not all that gung-ho about Brexit to begin with. Then she gets this post and she embraces it. And I just have this hope that she really just, her heart isn't in it. But I don't know, you explained it to me completely differently, Mike. But wouldn't it be great, I think, if this referendum turns out like the last one, the one that Cameron called to decide about Brexit, he thought he'd get big support and he lost. I would love it if a whole bunch of people end up in Parliament who hate Brexit and they decide not to go ahead with it.
So one of the things, the bets that she seems to be taking, and then go to Alan here, but one of the bets that she seems to be putting all of her chips on is that the Labour Party is in such disrepair and disorganization that she will gain more support.
She'll gain their seats.
And gain their seats and go ahead. But that seems to be, at least to me on paper and looking at how quickly politics goes back and forth, especially in how volatile this particular issue is, Alan, that's a pretty big bet to take.
Well, they are, and they have a lot of problems. For example, Scotland is a big problem. they want to stay in the EU, and there isn't much left of what. Well, there's something left, but Britain is, of course, diminishing in power, as it has since the Second World War and when they lost their colonial empire. She's taking a chance, all right. And interestingly, the word you didn't mention, Joe, in setting this up, at least I didn't hear it, was she said she was calling this election reluctantly. So I think she knows that there could be some real potential problems here. I've thought for a long time that her support for Brexit, I'm probably wrong, might have been a what we used to call a double, triple, quadruple fake out, meaning that I'm not so sure that she was wildly for it in the first place.
Yeah, she wasn't.
Yeah, exactly. So what you have?
So what, Alan? Why do you think she said reluctantly? What is compelling her to do this?
I think she thinks she said it reluctantly because, well, that's right. Those are the we don't know what's in her head, but we know that she's good at counting votes. We know that there are some people in her own conference and other places who are not happy with this whole thing. We know that there are huge numbers of people within the Great Britain who don't like it. And I'm sure she has her political reasons for calling this election, quote, reluctantly, because she knows she hasn't got what she needs in order to go forward.
Huh. Mike, what do you think?
At least that's what I'm thinking.
Well, on the surface, she's using it as an opportunity to consolidate. Right now, the Conservatives have only 330 out of 650 votes. That's a very slim majority that she has. And as Rosemary said, she can capitalize on disarray and pick up some seats and have not a big fight every time she wants to do another step of Brexit. That's on the surface. But I do wonder if in the back of her mind, this is a second round at Brexit. It's a way for the UK to sort of look soberly at what happened, look at Scotland's own displeasure with Brexit and wanting to stay in the Union, the European Union. And it could turn out that if it goes a different direction, it may be the grounds to call for another vote.
So my question, and I don't disagree with anything that you just said, Mike, but my question is, then why go through all the machinations prior and not call for this earlier? Instead of going through the process and saying, all right, we're going to do this and start taking all the beginning steps, putting everything, filing your paperwork, leaving the EU, doing all that stuff, and then call for the vote.
Maybe it's the same reason that we keep saying, okay, do the Trump people get it yet? She made it very real. This is what's going to happen. And you're already seeing an impact on the currency.
So you bring them right up to the line.
Yep, right up to the line. Okay, here's your last chance.
Think about it.
Plus, then it's another election, or maybe two. Yeah, let's have another election. They like them in England.
And then...
And they do them quickly.
Yes.
And they do them in a couple of weeks.
Well, and then, as I was working this out in my head this morning, driving into work, thinking to myself, wow, what if we could do that in this country?
Yeah,
just call for another election, right?
He'd still win.
You think so?
Yeah, right. I do.
Okay.
Well, if you held the election tomorrow, Donald Trump would win because there's nobody running against him who's more popular.
By the way, I don't think he'd win.
Who would he lose to? Yeah, the polls show that he would lose to any Democrat except to Elizabeth Taylor because we still are so
Elizabeth
incredible.
Warren?
Sorry, what am I doing today? I don't have a name right. I better leave.
Elizabeth Warren.
Andy Rooney and Elizabeth Taylor were in a movie together. Yeah, they were lovely.
I thought it was one of the more brilliant things you ever said, Rosemary. Really, because she's dead, so she couldn't have been. She couldn't have.
She would not win the election if it were held tomorrow.
Only in Chicago.
No. I thought you were going to say anybody except Hillary Clinton.
No, and actually the polls show anybody except Elizabeth Warren, of all people, because we don't like women. Slate did this story.
Well, the polls.
Yeah, the polls.
You can't trust them.
Yeah. Well, this gives me a chance to dig at the Democrats who continues the same. They continue the same mistake. Chuck Schumer, listen, that Hillary Clinton did. It is not enough to just knock Donald Trump. God knows we can do that expertly. But you have to have a plan. You have to have a program. Vote for the Democrats and you will be standing up for... fill in the blank. And Schumer is not doing that. It's not being done anyway. I heard Tom Perez on the talk shows yesterday, And he could not explain what the hell. They're talking to folks.
No, he
really
did
what
not.
Are you talking that to him about? No. Oh, well, we're just it's important to get a lot of voices out there. Okay. Yep. About what?
I think they're searching for that fill in the blank. And that's why Bernie Sanders did so well. He filled in the blanks so well for the millennial generation, and he gave people inspiration. The Democrats have nothing to offer. They're looking for a cause. I mean, how absurd is
that?
We
need a centrist spokesperson.
Well, but here's the problem. The Trump people are to the far right now. It's so disgusting and it's so awful, and they keep putting more and more Wall Street people onto the Goldman Sachs and Wall Street and despite the fact that Trump ran against them. Okay. But they're doing all of that. We now know what he is. So it's far right, and I think people are getting it. Now, on the Democratic side, it's an amalgam of some very liberal things in this country, which are probably, I want to hear what you have to say about this, Rosemary, probably out front of where most Americans are.
Yep.
I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying it is. And therefore, they can't come up with a program that, in fact, espouses the very things that made people turn off on them in the beginning.
Yeah, it is. You know, I think that America is basically a country of centrists, and there is no centrist spokesperson right now. You have the progressives, the Warrens, that part of the party is very outspoken, but they're seen as communists by the extreme right that Trump represents apparently so well. But where's that spokesperson for the middle, for standing up for American values, for compromise, for making government work, all those things that we pine for and have disappeared?
I don't know who it is.
Senator Chris Murphy.
I want to get back to France real quick before we move on. Since
you're in Europe anyway. Right?
Well, in this, I'm sorry, get back to Britain. But so the one thing of asking for this re-election, this election in Britain that Theresa May called for this morning, do you think it has anything to do to add to the overall European sentiment of what is happening in France and the possibility? Because don't forget, we have two phases of this vote. The first one is this weekend, and the next one is May 7th. So the two phases of that French vote, where you have a candidate in the running who has also
called for France exit,
which would essentially kill the the European Union.
You can't do it without Britain.
And also, so you wonder if that factors into the equation as well.
Wow. I had not thought about it, but it certainly does make sense, doesn't it, that people in France now, when they vote, are going to have to consider. That's funny. Somebody, Mike, just handed me a note that says, I'm going to miss Rosemary Clooney. Oh, wait, I mean Rosemary Arnao. And that's pretty funny.
Come on to my house. Okay.
But it does actually make a lot of sense that in France now, if you're going to vote for essentially leaving the European Union, you're going to be thinking it's really the death of the European Union. It isn't just France making its own deal. You're gonna be delivering a death blow.
To say nothing of Madame Le Pen being a leading contender to win the all the marbles. Can you imagine another? Well, what's the right word? Fascist, who will be leading the French government, and it looks like she may win. It's unbelievable.
Well, definitely in the first round. They haven't quite said that about the second round, but then I keep being reminded of the Trump years. Oh, he'll never get the nomination. Oh, don't worry.
Well, that's exactly what the people in France are saying is that there's, you know, she can't win, she can't win, she can't win. And then everybody
sounds
says,
familiar.
But what about Trump? Right.
Yeah, but I mean, Trump also has awoken people to the possibility that somebody to the extreme can win. And that may bring out the votes of the moderates to make sure it doesn't happen. That's one.
France also has a two-part voting system, unlike us, so people are very much aware that they can vote for her, thus deliver a message, and then in the second round, not vote for her and pull back their punches, which we did not do.
What if you're wrong?
Well, it seems, I mean...
Then you get Trump.
It seems fairly clear that she won't, but again, you never know. But to avoid the second round, she would have to receive over 50% of the vote. So if it were a candidate would have to receive 50% of the vote for it to become to avoid the second round.
Right.
Yeah.
But
so,
I have a feeling. You have 13 people running. Deja vu. I have a feeling of deja vu all over again, which is we see the rise of all of these dictator types around the world. And we see our president, who is one of them, and potentially, I think, suggesting, clapping everybody on the back and saying, oh, that's good. Way to go there. Way to go, Turkey. Way to go. I mean, it is a very scary time, and it does remind me a little bit of the pre-World War II ways that countries were doing things.
I will get, you know, I will admit that this is shades of gray, but when you listen to Le Pen speak, I mean, even at his worst, Trump was not saying that I'm going to ban yarmulkes and I'm going to ban burkas and I'm going to ban.
They found several of her associates to be Nazi sympathizers.
Right.
I mean,
that's right.
We're not saying neo-Nazi. We're saying Nazi sympathizers. Jeez.
Well, not to mention her father.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's take a break. We will hold there, and then we'll come back, and we'll talk about other stories. We'll go. We have much more to talk about, and we will do that right after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We do have letters. We'll go to those and then we'll move over and talk about other subjects in the news. We go to Steve, who says, does this mean we get a do-over on Trump? No, it does not mean that. George says, panel, to let you know how desperate and confused the Democrats are, Perez is barnstorming the country with Bernie Sanders. Not a Democrat.
Yeah, he got asked about that. Did not have a very good answer. Isn't it important for Bernie to be a Democrat to campaign for you? No, it's important to talk to a lot of people. Yeah, about what?
Doug says, Alan wins. Senator Chris Murphy, thoughtful, serious, intelligent, and articulate. And Rita says, Elizabeth Warren has a great message, but she pleads and whines. She needs to work on a more forceful delivery.
Oh, come on.
Well, you know, the problem with that, the problem with that is going to be, if she were a candidate in a primary, a Democratic primary, she might well win, just the way Bernie Sanders might well have won, you know, a little bit more. But she is a hero of the Democrats and the Democratic left, which would, if you see a poll that says she's the only one, Rosemary, that you mentioned, I haven't seen that poll, that would win.
No, that would not,
then
Alan.
What you
I'm sorry, Alan.
Yeah,
it,
I said wouldn't. Wouldn't win. Wouldn't win. Then you might get the kind of situation where the Republican wins. It's that simple.
I think that that last letter demonstrated that Warren would have the same problem Hillary did. It's not that she whines or has some sort of delivery. Shrill is what Hillary got. It's that they're women. This country not elect women. Our idea of gender change. Yeah. Okay, that's all. I'm getting off my soapbox.
How about Hickenlooper, John? Is it
Hickenlooper?
Hickenlooper. Sorry, you know
I can't even say his name.
Yeah,
I think we're talking about
the governor of Colorado.
Yeah, I think he was the mayor in the Gale Storm show in the 1950s.
No, he was the mayor of Denver after he was a guy who ran a brew pub, and then he became mayor of Denver, and then he was elected governor out there. And I thought that maybe he's one of the bright young voices, but I think he's like 68. You know, they need youth.
Go look up the Gale Storm show.
They don't really need youth. The Republicans didn't have youth. They elected the oldest guy ever.
Yeah, that's true. But who's out there? Who's out there, period? Not just who's out there, who's young or who's old.
That's why we're all falling over Nikki Haley. What has she done? She's given three speeches, and suddenly she's going to be the next president.
Well, you know, she at least has seemed to be somewhat independent and not taking the company line, and that's admirable.
And you can tell that in three speeches and a month and a half on the job, Mike. Would you hire somebody at the paper knowing that little about them? And yet we do that for the president of the United States.
Oh, you bet we do. Yeah. I mean, I think it's okay to talk about her and vet her for 3 years from now. You know, that's perfectly okay. And she is a woman. I don't know if you know that. That's a good thing.
Yes, it's good that we look at women. I think she won't get in because of
no,
that.
No.
All right, let's move on. not that I'm not enjoying this. let us talk about North Korea and what is happening there. Obviously,
what is happening there?
I don't know. We talked about this yesterday as far as what are the options? And there, I'm looking at a New York Times article that is titled "Why There Are No Good Options," and so I wanted to talk a little bit about that. North Korea, a small and poor country facing far stronger adversaries than the perpetual threat of its own collapse, would not seem a likely state to defy four consecutive American presidents. Yet it is precisely that weakness, analysts say, along with the country's history and internal dynamics, that drives its leaders to pursue nuclear and missile programs at virtually any cost, and that robs the world of almost any option to limit them. Those factors, when viewed together, show why Barack Obama warned President Trump that North Korea would be the gravest foreign threat he faced, and why a solution has proved so hard to find. Vice President Mike Pence, speaking in South Korea on Monday, cited Mr. Trump's strength and willingness to use force, warning North Korea would do well not to test his resolve.
I think Obama should not have said anything. It's like Trump is so eager to undo everything Trump that his pointing that out as a problem probably prompted him to say, I can solve it in my first 100 days.
Isn't that strange? But it probably is plausible. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's at least plausible, and it probably is true. That made him want to do better than Obama did. Oh, he messed that up. That's a problem for him. I'll fix the problem.
It's simple.
I don't think Mike Pence could have said anything more. I think the North Koreans needed exactly what Mike Pence said. I don't think he could have said anything better than what he said to unite North Koreans and affirm this sort of, as the New York Times calls it, this sort of perpetual state of almost war that it's in. That kind of keeps it on the edge. It unites the country. It's the excuse for why they're letting people starve while they're building all these missiles and this nuclear program at that expense. And it's just a perpetual way to keep people on the edge. And Pence fed right into that.
Big bad America is after you. And don't forget what Trump said yesterday, asked about, did he have a message for the leader of North Korea? And he goes, have to behave as if he were a child. What a taunting, belittling, really, I think, stupid thing to say to a guy who has
a certainly wasn't diplomatic.
Well, thoughtless.
Not diplomatic. So, go ahead, Alan.
So let's get inside of Trump's head. What is he trying to do? You remember when Trudeau got inside of Ronald Reagan's head by his ear in Doonesbury? Well, let's try to get inside his head. His technique is obviously to scare the hell out of the North Koreans. And by doing so, the method for doing so is to act like a man who has no controls on him, right? Otherwise known as, some people, I got criticized heavily yesterday by one person because I said he was crazy. But he has to at least act crazy.
Calculated crazy.
You know, you don't know what this guy's going to do. He's not going to say anything. He's like a stern grandfather or whatever else. And he's saying to us, enough said, meaning next thing comes, you know what, slim pickings on the bomb. So that is why I think that the Trump technique, and I don't know if it's going to work, is invoke Saddam Hussein, invoke what this country has done in the past, and say, you are not safe. And I think that's what he's doing. I don't know if it'll work.
Well, it isn't changing anything from previous administrations. It doesn't seem to move the needle. For Trump to have this hard line, you know, Obama had a hard line.
No, I don't agree.
Yeah.
No, I don't agree. I think that Barack Obama is a solid citizen, a guy who was rational and thoughtful and wasn't going off in a different way. And Trump is anything but that. I think Trump is regarded by these people as a serious threat. He's got his hand on the button and he may use it.
I think that's what they're trying to say. Certainly Pence tried to give that impression, pointing out repeatedly, look at that bomb in Afghanistan. Look at all those missiles in Syria. Don't underestimate the, you know, the...
But that's helpful to him, Kim Jong-un, to unite his country.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it doesn't do any... Well, now, wasn't there a point at the end of the Bill Clinton administration where there was a bit of a tiny thawing? Madeleine Albright was able to go to North Korea. Yeah. It looked like if that administration had lasted another 6 weeks, Clinton himself might have gone to North Korea, and there might have been some kind of the beginning of a dialogue, which might have changed history. But it just, and then as soon as Bush got in there, they were the enemy again, and he was all bravado, just like Trump is now, and boom, that helped North Korea's leaders continue this sort of unending.
And North Korea became part of the Axis of
evil.
So are you suggesting, Rosemary and Mike, or Mike in this case, that the North Korean leader, Kim, would be willing to negotiate as a good player? I'm just asking.
No. It was his father.
I want to know.
Yeah, it was his father that was in his older years, and maybe he was looking at things and saw, or maybe he just liked Clinton. I mean, there's this sort of, they love American icons, and Clinton was kind of a dude that he really liked, just the way that they like some American actors and basketball players, et cetera, et cetera. But for whatever reason, Clinton was starting to leverage that. Remember, there was a college student who was imprisoned, an American college student, a few years later.
Yeah, yeah.
And Clinton flew over, landed in Korea. The kid got on the plane and he flew them away. And, I mean, they let Clinton do that. They had something. I mean, whatever reason, they seemed to be signaling there is diversity in that government. Now, probably those people who disagree with Kim have been eliminated.
That we'll never know, because this administration has decided it doesn't believe in diplomacy and wants to slash the State Department and not hire anybody in without even having 4 months' experience as a diplomat. Our chief diplomat says the era of patience is over. But this, to me, seems like work John Kerry or Madeleine Albright or Hillary Clinton could have done in a minute. You've got a guy who wants to be taken as a big deal on the world stage, and talking, holding negotiations with the United States would fulfill that. We don't have to just say, you know, we're going to bomb you. We could say, we're coming to your place. We're going to meet in the demilitarized zone, and we are going to talk. We want you there. They would be players. Worth a try, but as it'll happen.
Do you ever wonder how that kid just happened to get to Korea, North Korea? It slipped over the border.
Well, they go in
or doing something. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, some of them go in.
You think he might have been tourists. What we call an asset? You think he might? Well, maybe a tourist, maybe an asset.
Yeah, I mean, I watch Homeland. I understand what you're talking about.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Mike Spain. I'm Joe Donahue. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. We were talking about the future of the Democratic Party a few moments ago, so I find it appropriate to talk about the Georgia House race that is, according to the Washington Post, stoking a GOP identity crisis as well as opportunity for Democrats. There is a young man, I believe he is 29 or 30 years old,
30.
Is that correct? 30 years old, who is running for the Democrat on the Democratic side, John Ossoff. I believe I'm pronouncing that correct. Awesome.
It is. In fact, there's a great meme.
Yes.
Another word I can never pronounce, going around the internet to Georgians in the 6th District. Go and vote your Ossoff.
Get
it?
Cute.
Get
nice.
It?
Very cute.
Can you say that on the radio?
Ossoff, it's the man's name.
Oh, okay.
Ossoff. O-S-S-O-F-F, and he is running and looking to replace former Congressman Tom Price, who is now the Secretary of Health and Human Services. The election is today, and it's the 6th Congressional District. And the question is, how will this go down?
Well, as I understand it...
Well, it's a first of all, it's a Republican district. It's a Republican district, right? I mean, it is.
Red, they say.
Now, what'd you say?
Beat red, not just Republican, super Republican.
Yeah, 60-40 yeah. Republican yeah. to Democrat.
So, on the other hand, Trump didn't do well there. Won only by... really trailed the ticket. And so there's some hope that the moderates or the people in the middle or the what we call the real Republicans, the old-style Republicans, will come out and slap Trump on the hand and say, see, we told you we didn't vote for him the last time, and that the people in the middle will be the difference in terms of winning. I'm not holding my breath, but I do think it's a real chance for the Democrats to make some hay. And in fact, people are coming in from all over the country to campaign in that district, which it turns out may not have been the smartest thing to allow to have happen, mm-hmm. because there does seem, according to some of the commentary I've seen, to be a little bit of a reaction against the outsiders.
Yeah, it is hugely funded by outside donors. There's celebrities going in there. This is a method that did not work for Hillary Clinton, and I would not be surprised if he lost. And I feel disappointed in that. Once again, here we knew that opportunity was there, we being Democrats. We put in an unknown. This guy is apparently talented, but he's only 30. He's not done that much. And then back him up with this huge out-of-town structure that
and
people
money.
Resent.
A lot of out-of-town money.
Yeah,
you know, millions.
People resent that. Yeah. So once again, I think the Democrats should have found a real person internally and someone who could deliver a message saying, vote for me and here is what you will get.
Alan?
On the other hand, Rosemary, I think that the big advantage that I'm seeing for the Democrats is the millennialism of the young candidate. I mean, we have discovered now, finally, that millennials make a huge difference because they don't think like everybody else did. For example, they don't think the same way about LGBTQ.
You sound like Donald Trump now. LG. What's the other letters?
Yeah. Well, no. You're right. I goofed there. I wasn't good about that.
I've been mispronouncing all day. I can't throw any stones.
Yeah. Well, I understand that you're just getting. By the way, I want you to know I had lunch with him one time, and he was fantastic. I think it was Fred Friendly, he and I. And we sat down, and when Fred Friendly, I think, got up to go to the bathroom.
Wait, lunch with who? George Clooney.
With Andy Rooney.
Andy Rooney. George Clooney, Andy Rooney. Fred Friendly.
Did anyone else see that? Yeah, all those guys.
Oh, my goodness.
Where the hell did that come from?
Joe, you'll know the answer to this. Who played Fred Friendly in Goodnight, Good Luck?
George Clooney.
Now that I've failed at that, let me go back to the original premise that there is something to be said about millennials making a huge difference as they're coming up. And now you had a 30-year-old guy. It may have turned out to be a brilliant strategy.
Well, what do we know about the demographics of that sixth district? Is it
it's a Republican?
I know it's 60-40 Republican, which doesn't sound millennial. Has a lot of strength there. Are there new voters coming in? Maybe.
It's a very cool shopping area, which has some coffee shops. Those attract millennials. So there.
Yeah. Well, they go to rallies, but do they vote? That's been a problem, and we don't know. I don't know. You can't build a campaign so far on that. Do the Democrats know? Do they put in the effort to find that out, to recruit young people? I haven't seen it.
President Trump won, as we mentioned, barely won the district last year, but he tweeted on Monday that the media coverage of the race was a game and bad, all capital letters, exclamation point.
And Stephen Bannon has been advising some of the Republican candidates in the race, too, and Newt Gingrich has. They're saying that we don't want to put one of Nancy Pelosi's people in representing you here with outside money financing his campaign. I mean, they're really getting, trying to evoke the hardline Republicans to come
out. But that is not a sign that the Democrats are in great strength. It is a sign that the Republicans, unlike the Democrats, have their act together. They treat every race as important, and they do this sort of thing.
Now, Professor, I have a question for you. you keep saying the Democrats as if there's a big Democrat behind the screen who can say who is going to be elected by the primary voters. This guy puts himself forward and apparently is doing extraordinarily well. The grandparents say, that could be my grandson. And the parents say, that could be my son. And the millennials say, hey, there's one of us.
Alan, I hope you're right, but I think we're going to end up talking about this election just like we did the one in Kansas. Oh, we came so close. You can do extraordinarily well, and you still lose. The Republicans are still in charge. So if there is no one in charge of deciding who's going to run, we need to get one. Chuck, stand up.
And the way this works
is... No, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah, why not? Yeah. It better work or we're going to lose it all. I mean, do you realize how close the Republicans are to being able to call a constitutional convention? And then...
That's frightening.
Then they're changing the Constitution.
Right. Think about the Second Amendment, how it will be bolstered by a constitutional amendment.
And you know they will.
Yeah.
And gays, and you know forget about gay marriage, that's out, and balanced budgets, and it's a horror.
All right, well, you just took the air out of the room there, but all right.
No, that's a frightening prospect. That's a different story, but it's a frightening prospect.
This is part of it. Every election counts. Every kind of...
it does.
Even at the level of... That's state level, and of course, I know we're talking about Congress, but... The Republicans have been doing this for years, and the Democrats still have not awakened to the fact, because we had Obama in the White House, we thought we had it all.
We shouldn't be worried about the Democrats right now. What we should be worried about are the Republicans, because the Republicans have to decide whether their bread is on the same side of the turkey as that's a very, very mixed metaphor.
Side of the turkey.
It is
my
a mixed
God.
Metaphor.
Right.
Yes.
In other words, the Republicans have to decide, am I going to lose if I stick with this turkey? Don't you see?
Trump.
I got it. Well, if he gets if the Democratic candidate gets 50% of this vote, he's in and that's over, right? And he's polling in the low to mid 40s.
Right.
So, you know, could happen.
We have letters. Let's go to those. Teresa says, I can't believe Rosemary just said the Dems need a centrist candidate. Who do you think just lost? The country is ready for a true progressive, not more Goldman Sachs from Trump or Hillary. You could have had Bernie. He was where people's hearts were.
Baloney, baloney.
Steve says this country currently is not a centrist country. It is a factional. A result of political and central tribalism expressing itself in the absence of leadership. Alan writes, we won't elect women and look right past their accomplishments and qualifications. Rosemary's right. Meanwhile, watching the primaries, the parade of car salesmen, I was thoroughly nauseated. It's an embarrassment. Anthony says, tough to find a centrist when everything today is so dramatically divided.
Yes.
We see it within parties, whether it be Democrat or Republican. We see it in the discrepancy with wealth. Even the weather seems to be dramatically different from one day to the next, but that may be a little bit of a stretch. Eric says, Rosemary wonders where the party is that stands up for working people, families, and other progressive causes. They're called the Working Families Party, the Greens, and others the Democrats refuse to vote for each November. What this country needs is to build and support and vote for alternative parties, which will actually run candidates like Bernie Sanders, who should have been given a shot at Trump, by the way. I wonder how much the Democrats wish they'd not engineer the nomination for Hillary now. Bill says the modern Dem party will keep losing because they refuse to face their flawed strategy, quote unquote. Hillary Clinton tried to appeal to Republicans by showing lists of Republican national security hacks endorsing her. Hayden, Chertoff, Negroponte, Kissinger, for crying out loud, being only slightly less horrible than GOP is a pathetic approach, and they're doing it again in Georgia right now. Kevin says, Pence also made it clear that Trump was the one who they should be afraid of, this regarding Pence and Korea, that he would be the one to teach them a forceful lesson, not the U.S., not the American people. And Victoria goes back to the reluctant parliamentary elections. As an American, yanked to Canadians, living with Canada's parliamentary vote since 1976, I can say calls for snap elections are felt to be intrusive. Therefore, the caller always apologizes to the nation in some way, hence the word reluctantly. Incidentally, the reason parliamentary elections go so quickly is this. The opposition party always maintains a shadow government. Each opposition critic will likely be appointed to head the ministry that he or she had been tasked to criticize when in opposition. Those are your letters for the moment. We welcome more. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We will continue our conversation after this news break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. Alan Chartok is here and Rosemary Armeo, Mike Spain. I'm Joe Donahue, and we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. And Rosemary Armeo has a little announcement she would like to make.
Yes.
Oh, it's a commercial.
This Thursday, it's underwriting.
No, what is that?
This Thursday, the League of Women Voters and the Women's Press Club and the Del Mar Reformed Church is putting on a panel called The Future of Journalism and the First Amendment. And Rex Smith from the Times Union will be there. I'm going to be there. Robert Heverly from Albany Law School and Angela Ledford, who's a poli-sci professor at St. Rose. And I've been told that I have to say more than just there is no future. I can't say that. So we'll be talking about it.
The future of media.
Journalism and the First Amendment.
And I should also, while we're doing commercial things, next Thursday, the 27th, I'm going to be hosting, and I asked Rosemary to come. But Rosemary, Judy Patrick, the Post Star, and the Greenwich High School, the Greenwich Government Program, at the high school, we're doing a fake versus real news panel. And that is at 7 o'clock at the high school in Greenwich. And so
that's we'll that is the hot topic, isn't it? People want to hear about it.
It is what people want to hear about. Yeah. Absolutely. So
I've been collecting cartoons about it. It's pretty funny stuff.
Good.
About fake news.
About fake news, yeah.
Excellent. We'll bring them.
Yeah, I will. I'll do a PowerPoint.
Okay.
Then I don't have to talk. I have to find the Greenwich High School. That's going to be the trick.
That's why they have GPS now.
Yeah, I've heard
those
of
those young people have those phones. No.
It's not that
Greenwich
far.
Greenwich is not that far.
Okay.
I'll get you to the brewery first. Okay.
Wow. This is sounding like a good gig.
And
also, one more thing.
Yeah.
April 22nd, that's this weekend, at the Science March is going to be at Swan in Washington. That's the west part of the State House. We need at least 1,000 people there to stand up for, like, intelligence and rationality. And there's games and food and all that stuff, too.
Alan, you got anything to promote?
I do.
The Ramblers?
Thank you very much. No, not at all. No, I wouldn't be that crass. I'm going to be standing on the corner of Sumner and Hollenbeck planting bulbs, if anybody wants to be there.
Wants to engage in some spirited conversation.
Can you still plant bulbs? Didn't we miss the boat by not doing it last fall? Or can you do it now?
Well,
No. I just bought them.
No, I think, yeah, you can do
plant
it. Yeah,
no. Pretty much any time.
Oh, okay.
My tulips are coming up.
Yeah,
no.
That's encouraging.
Mm-hmm. You mean I've been had?
No. I thought I missed the boat. Now I can do it.
I'm just impressed that you gave people your address.
It's in the phone book.
Okay. There'll be 1,000 people there. They'll be talking about science and horticulture and all that.
Yeah, you know, I know about horticulture.
And when people come up to me at events and say, oh, I know where you live, and I'm like, oh, well, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to kill you. let's see, we had notes from Chris. Chris says, Trump's main strategy is to bluff up until he became president, and he could generally slink away if somebody called his bluff. That's not the case now. Bluffing is a bad strategy for conducting geopolitics, in my opinion.
Reasonable opinion.
Cory Booker, viable young Democratic candidate. Kamala Harris from California.
Yeah,
Harris.
She's impressive.
Both are senators with prior local governing experience. Kamala has a great background as California AG and has been at the forefront of criminal justice reform. Danny says what's really scary, in my opinion, is we had far less reason to go to war in Iraq, and somehow the Bush administration figured out a way to allow that. Trump is crazier and possibly dumber. Are we going to end up in a full-scale ground war in North Korea?
Hmm. That's a frightening thought. A ground war in North Korea. I mean, don't they have a million?
I think that's the last thing that's going to happen.
Yeah.
I think the danger here is the bomb.
Yeah. Agreed.
Which we saw in full display over the weekend.
Perhaps.
Yes. Okay. Partial display. Jim says, Rosemary grants gravitas to the so-called leader of North Korea, therefore negotiate. Really? What are his qualifications other than genes and brutality? Trump has them guessing. Perfect.
Oh, my goodness. Well, he's the leader of the country. That lends you a certain gravitas.
I'll go back a few letters that you read. I mean, when you have this bravado going on and personalities and bluffing going on and there's nuclear weapons involved, it's pretty scary.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
All right, let's go to some other stories in the news. Let us talk about Arkansas and the execution plan. The court decisions forces Arkansas to halt execution. After a pair of court defeats, the state of Arkansas was forced late Monday to abandon its plan to carry out its first execution in more than a decade. The canceled execution of a condemned prisoner was a significant setback for the state, which had sought to put 8 men to death this month before its stock of a lethal injection drug expired. On Monday afternoon, the state Supreme Court stayed the execution of Don Davis, who was convicted more than a quarter century ago of a murder in northwestern Arkansas. Then about 15 minutes before his death warrant was due to expire, the U.S. Supreme Court refused to overrule the Arkansas jurists, who had voted 4-3 to halt the execution. The decisions do not affect 5 other executions that are scheduled this month at the unit. Until word of the decision from Washington reached the prison in rural southeast Arkansas, state officials were optimistic that the justices would allow them to proceed. Witnesses moved across the darkened campus toward the death chamber. Mr. Davis waited for a lethal injection for hours after he was offered what he had planned as his last meal.
Wow. Just horrible. And once again, the courts have stood in as the last bastion of civilization and prevented a just really ferocious mass execution, one after another in Arkansas. I don't understand the point of this. Can anybody here explain to me why suddenly we have to kill 8 men all at once?
It's because of the medicine, right?
The drug that they use is no longer going to be available after April. So they've had these guys on death row. For this guy for years and others for long periods of time, and they're trying to rush them through so that they can, execute them before they have no other means to legally execute them because, the courts have found that these use of these drugs could violate the Constitution and constitute cruel and unusual punishment. So they're in a rush and they're getting stopped.
But if you take a look overall at this thing, the idea that the expiration date on a drug is what will determine whether 6 people live or die is extraordinary, isn't it? I mean,
it's kind of absurd.
But one thing I want to say is, look, I get it. I get why we don't want to kill people. But I'm telling you, one thing that gets forgotten in this debate is how horrible some of these killers are. Now, I'm not arguing that they should be killed. I think they should be, as Mario Cuomo said, put in a jail cell, and the only thing they hear is the sound of the toilet for the rest of their lives. But they are terrible people in some cases. But at least you can't make a mistake. At least you can't make a mistake, which we see all the time.
Mistakes have been made. Innocent people have been executed. People on death row have been found to be not guilty and exonerated at the Innocence Project and other projects like it. Mm-hmm. Law students at various schools around the country study these cases and find flaws in their defense and get them freed. So that alone is, this particular guy, Mr. Davis, who they're talking about, acknowledges how ruthless the murder he committed was and is ready to die, he says. But, should they be able to decide? Should a prisoner be able to decide whether his life ends or not?
Also, to add to your litany of things there, Mike, I mean, the the problems they've had with these drugs as far as the lethal injections. They've had many, many false attempts that have gone wrong, which is one of the reasons why the drugs aren't being manufactured anymore.
And the manufacturers are refusing to sell them for this purpose when
right.
they, you know.
Kind of gives them a bad name.
Some of them are just sedatives that would be used in hospitals after surgery or to treat pain, but they're just huge doses. But the manufacturers won't sell them to states to use them for this purpose.
It just gives the drug a bad name. Here, take this. It's killed thousands in the Texas and Arkansas. You know, that's not
Didn't
a great commercial.
I'd read this, I think, just about a week ago, so it may be a little foggy, but it was 20 people last year who were executed. I think it was one of the lowest numbers.
Right, right. Yeah, it's picking up a little bit. Texas is starting
yes.
to, you know.
And this would have would have obviously brought it up substantially.
Yeah, this would have jumped it up, certainly. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So then we wait to see what happens to the other six individuals, correct?
Yeah, there's just a few days, and they're going to run out of time. And that would be regarded as a victory for people who are opposed to the death penalty, but probably not based on any morals or any recognition of how hideous killing people is.
That's well put.
But rather because, well, we ran out of the drugs. The expiration date. I can't use that drug to kill the guy anymore because the bottle says it's expired. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not a good reason.
Well, we talked about the Supreme Court and their part in this, but yesterday was Neil Gorsuch's first day on the Supreme Court, first day on the job, and
he wasn't shy.
No, apparently pretty chatty.
Isn't going to be another Clarence, that's for sure.
I
don't know what you can tell from a first day on the job, but he got right into the debate. He waited, they say, 9 minutes into the argument, and before he started to ask questions, which they say were wordy, often lengthy. And got right into it. So he's off to the races.
In fairness.
But
go ahead. I was just going to say that in fairness, Sonia Sotomayor on her first day was rather verbose also.
So I have students like that. They're always hated by the rest.
They won't shut up?
Yeah. They're show-offs.
Well,
but
I don't know.
We love them.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's so you go and you ask questions and it's on-the-job training, right? I mean,
I heard he brought coffee for everybody.
Well,
no.
Watch their cars.
He had his girl bring coffee for everyone.
Oh, Rosemary.
Oh, boy.
I can't say anything.
Can I go now? Can I go now?
Go.
But I just want to, make sure that we understand what he was doing up there. He kept saying the same thing again and again. Can't we just follow the statute? Now, you'll remember during the nomination period, mm-hmm. When he was being quizzed, he kept saying that. All you have to do is follow the statute, follow the intent of the law. But, of course, then there's always the question of what was the intent of the law?
Yeah, what do you think the Founding Fathers meant about the Internet and net neutrality?
Exactly.
You know? Did they confront LGBT and Q, that's the problem here. Mm-hmm. It means all that stuff gets thrown out because it wasn't in the Constitution. It's not literally mentioned there.
So, I don't know what you can tell from her first day, but we mentioned that story anyway, right?
Hmm.
Okay, so this was the story, and Mike, you mentioned this earlier, but I just want to get to it because we didn't really talk about it that much yesterday, and that is that the unreleased tax returns of Donald Trump, of course, there were protests and rallies all over the country on Saturday, which was the 15th. And President Trump's promise to enact a sweeping overhaul of the tax code is in serious jeopardy nearly 100 days into his tenure, and his refusal to release his own tax return is emerging as a central hurdle to another faltering campaign promise. As procrastinators rush to file their tax returns by today, the White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer emphasized again on Monday that Mr. Trump had no intention of making his public. Democrats have seized on that decision, uniting around a pledge not to cooperate on any rewriting of the tax code unless they know specifically how the revision would benefit the billionaire president and his family. And a growing roster of more than a dozen Republican lawmakers now say Mr. Trump should release them as well. Senator Chuck Schumer, the Democratic leader, said if he doesn't release his returns, it's going to make it much more difficult to get tax reform done.
Well, I'd like to quote Richard Nixon here, back in 1973 yep. when he released his tax returns. He said, people have got to know whether or not their president is a crook. Well, I am not a crook. and you know, even Nixon was transparent and understood that if you're going to talk about tax reform with people, they ought to know how you're going to benefit and how you're going to be affected by the rules that you're pushing on them and whether it's going to make you wealthy. And that's yeah, but, and that's an obstacle he's going to have to face, Trump.
Well, this is very important. It's very important, I'll tell you, for a couple of reasons. Politically, it's important to the Republican congressmen who take a look at the polls and see, I think, what is it, Rosemary? I think we said yesterday 74% of the yes. people want those released.
According
something
to the latest,
incredible like that. Yeah.
I thought it was just the yeah. media that wanted it.
Yes, the Washington Post ABC poll said 74% of Americans.
So something like that. So as a result of that, there are some very smart, self-preserving congressmen and senators. They hit themselves up the side of their heads and they say what? They say, okay, I'll buy some of that. Why should I not say what the American people want? And they're beginning to desert. And it seems to me that's the beginning of the end for Trump.
Yeah, it makes you wonder if there's something, you know, he's taking a lot of political heat. It's going to cost him a lot by not releasing them. It must be calculated, though, because if he releases them, he must know that that would be worse. That's the only thing you can assume.
He cannot.
Yeah.
Yeah, he cannot. He doesn't. There's a reason he's not doing it. And to me, as I've said in the past, that's the reason that you really suspect all of this, because he cannot release them. He won't, no matter what. He's going down with the ship.
The important thing is to find out who he owes money to. And the way to find that out is his taxes. Who is he indebted to? And the other thing is the emoluments clause, which the Constitution forbids the president, although it says nothing about conflict of interest. It does say that the president may not be enriched by foreign powers. And those are the two things that we need to find out.
Without congressional consent. You know, he
Without
could come out and say, hey,
consent,
I just got
exactly.
this gold chalice exactly. from the, you know, king of such and such. And and Congress could say, it's okay.
You deserved it.
Yeah, you
Keep
deserved it,
it
Mr. Yeah. Mr. President.
You worked hard.
You worked hard.
When it comes to... go ahead, yeah. Alan.
No, I was just going to say that this has such importance. When Rosemary just mentioned the emoluments clause, that's right. Because when these impeachment charges are filed, and they will be filed, there's going to be a separate section on the emoluments, I am sure. But the main thing, if it happens, is going to be the Russians. And that one, this week, has been somewhat neglected. And so that's of concern to me.
Oh, Alan, don't you think we moved on?
It's good.
That's what
yeah.
some people are saying. Yeah. Don't yeah, you think we moved on?
You know, the
And by the way...
I'm sorry, I was going to add that keeping his taxes under a cloak is part of a bigger movement by his regime to cut down on transparency. And just as troubling is he's reversed an Obama ruling, of course, that's what he does, to let the White House visitor logs be seen by the public.
Yep.
This is not something that happened before, and that's what he's using as an excuse. Oh, traditionally, we don't show it. But any advance in transparency should not be negated, especially because in this case, there were particular cases where the Obama administration could say, no, we're not going to reveal it. There might be national security reasons. There might be negotiations underway. So there's a recognition by the press that, okay, we can't know everything, but we can know most of the people coming to visit you, either in the White House or in this case in Mar-a-Lago, and we will not see anything. Who
Sean,
he talks to, who influences him, private.
Sean Spicer, the White House press secretary, facing a barrage of questions about the president's commitment to transparency, repeatedly shut down reporters' queries yesterday from the identity of Mr. Trump's weekend golf partners to his refusal to release his 2016 tax returns. Mr. Spicer said that, quote, greater public disclosure was unnecessary, intrusive, and even harmful.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that's what we're at.
Open government's a bad thing now. Jeez.
Well, the other thing that we have to look at here is the possibility of Trump's overall tax reform, which ain't going to happen as a result, really, as a result of his not disclosing his own taxes. I think that's the end of that.
And he needs it, too. He's had no big legislative success at all, has he?
He fired those Tomahawk missiles.
That was by executive, by fiat. He's pretty good at fiats. He's just not good at getting anything through. Through the
process. Most of his cabinet's been approved.
Boy, he's got big gaps in staffing. Of course, he says that's on purpose.
Meanwhile, we have till midnight tonight to file our taxes.
Mine are filed and paid.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Mine too.
If anybody wants to see them, let me know. I have no problem with that.
All right. We're out of time. My thanks to everybody. Alan, thank you very much. Rosemary.
Welcome.
And Mike, thank you. We will be back with another panel tomorrow morning, and we will return in just a moment with more Roundtable after this.